Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Well, it's a day to set aside honor for all those who have worn the uniform of the United States. This is war and in peace. And we are honored today to be a part of it here at Perkins. Welcome. It is from Montana for Montana. We've got a special Veterans Day program for you here. Yes, we are at Perkins in Billings, where I just got done doing a show with Scott Fredericks, and we've got so much to share. Jack Kindleman is going to be joining us here in just a few minutes. He is a World War II veteran and a Korean War veteran. And his daughter, Jackie, is with us. A bit later on, we'll dig into the Camel Court. And then we'll talk about how veterans are being integrated into their communities in through a lot of ways. So it is a happy Veterans Day to you. Thank you for your service show here on Voices of Montana. Thank you guys for your dedicated service here. That's what we're doing today. But that service has also at times led to, well, revelations for people individually, but also communities, even as a society, as we look back and we look at our veterans and the wars and how they have sacrificed for the freedoms that we have. It's vital that we remember that, because we still, that fight goes on today. Thank you for your service, and thank you for joining us here, two decades strong and working on three, and as always, from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Jack is standing by, a World War II veteran, a Korean War veteran, his daughter Jackie as well. Scott Fredericks from our affiliate in Desert Mountain here in Billings, Montana. Good morning, Scott. You've been doing this show yourself. Now, we've been on the radio since 6 o'clock this morning. 17 years doing this special program for your station and for the people of Billings, Montana. Congratulations to that.
I only have one question.
Yeah.
When did Cody Ross get a baritone voice?
At age zero.
Okay.
Right from birth is when the baritone voice was born.
You know, we were just on for 3 hours, our 17th annual one, and like I was saying on our local program, each year I learned so much more from the veterans. When we had Jack on, you know, I heard, you know, learned so much more when we were talking with the folks from the Camel Court, mm-hmm. and you know, Greg Gable and everything like that. You think you know, but you don't know,
right?
You know, yeah. So it, you know, it's just, you know, it's one of my proudest moments each year when this program is on, and you know, it's fun to put it together, and it's just fun to talk with these veterans.
Yes, it is. Lean in here too, okay? You're co-hosting the show today. I appreciate you. It was good to speak with Colonel Hensley as well, who's in charge of the ROTC.
You were
program.
Just enamored by all his medals.
Well, he's got a dozen of them there. How can you not? You know,
yeah.
And he told some great stories. We're going to hear some stories now as we welcome our first guest, and it's Jack Kindleman. Good morning, Jack. How are you, sir?
Good.
Let me make sure I got you. There you are. Thanks for coming in. And Jackie, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Do I not have you up? Let me see. We had to make a quick switch. And Jackie, are you there?
There. I think so.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Jack, thank you for your service. Thanks for being here, too. I want to just throw this your way a little bit. World War II and then the Korean War as well.
Yes.
America was pretty young still back then, weren't they?
Yes, it certainly was.
Yeah. What did that mean to you? Why did you enlist?
Well, when Pearl Harbor happened, and I was too young at that time, and I just thought, well, every young person should males at that time could get in the service and do something for our country.
Nice. And so it was Pearl Harbor, right? That kind of sparked an interest in you. What was that interest, Jack? I mean, just service? Were you interested in fighting?
Well, I think, you know, like it's a war, so
yeah.
I think the whole theory was that we were part of the fighting group. So,
what was your first day like? What was your first week like in service, your first day, and knowing going in a time of conflict?
Well, I went to San Diego for boot camp, and it was a huge facility. There was 30,000 naval people training there, so I just thought it was part of the group, you know.
And then, what division did you go into?
Well, yeah, I was in the Navy, and most of the Navy people were assigned out of Washington, so there was not group, so to speak. You know, if they needed people on this ship, they'd send five guys out for that. So it was more individual, like, you know, in the Navy.
Where did you grow up? Why did you choose the Navy?
Oh, I don't know. Just, I don't know why. I guess I thought there'd be more opportunities for schooling and stuff like that.
Different things, yeah.
Different things, yeah.
Yeah. What was your experience during World War II?
Well, World War II, I was just mostly, I went to boot camp, recruit training is what they called it. And then they give us tests, and I qualified for schooling. And the only schooling available was, I can't remember what they were, but radio operator was one that I thought would fit my desires.
It's an interesting story because that's what my dad did, Sergeant Schultz. He fought in the Korea War as well. And I shared this story with you last hour. And Jackie, I'm going to have you comment on this too, because we're sitting here talking about service and your service in World War II in Korea. And it's hard, especially for that generation, to come out of service and then just jump right back into the community. You're expected to do that. I remember my father and I were hunting, and he never talked too much about his service as well. It was kind of private, and there were things that you had to do to survive, and they weren't always so flattering. But he had experienced some kind of flashback as we were hunting, and I saw some hunters across the hill and said, that reminded me of my time in Korea. And then that opened the door. What opened the door for you, Jackie, to have your dad talk with you and as the family, and how it became important for your history?
Well, it was an amazing experience. Dad and I got to go on the honor flight together, and I was a journalist.
Nice.
I am a journalist, and that was the reason I was able to accompany Dad to Washington, D.C. We decided it was 2013. It was one of the last honor flights, and there were several veterans there. It was all to honor World War II, several veterans that Dad knew from Roundup, which is his hometown, and the experience being there with Dad and seeing everyone in Washington, D.C. celebrating these vets as heroes, then I began to see my dad as a hero.
Yeah.
And we were at the Korean War Memorial, and the dad was posing next to a radio man, a radio operator, because that's what he was.
Yeah.
And a Korean family came up to us. I'm sure they were Korean. And they said thank you very quietly. And, oh, my gosh, it really hit me. You know, these people are here. They're so grateful for what my dad did. And they recognized him as a vet. And, yeah, that kind of changed my whole experience of life.
Yeah.
Like, I finally realized who my dad was and what he had done for his country.
You know, I helped a lot with the honor flight. And one of the, you know, people that went on the honor flight as chaperones, it was almost the same story. When they got on the plane, it was like quiet when they got there. And then when they, you know, visited the memorials and had the banquet, and then when they came back on the plane, they were just chatty. Is that kind of the truth?
Absolutely, yes.
Jack, talk about that experience. Talk about how that helped, that honor flight experience.
Well, it was just great, you know. I saw so many people there, and that was great. And one of the things that struck me in the concourse of Washington, D.C., we were on kind of a private concourse, and there was like 15 or 20 groups or as you what. And what these groups were, they were grade school kids, yeah, perhaps 10 or 15 from Podunk, Virginia, and some of them places. And they all congratulated every one of us. And then some of them performed musical instruments and stuff like that. And that was touching. I mean, that was so them young people would do that. That was one of the best.
What did you feel like when you got the water cannon salute?
Oh, that was great, yeah. Yeah, when the plane come, I think they did the water things, and that was great. It was just overwhelming is what it was.
I don't think Dad and I knew what to expect.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like I said, everyone was celebrated as a hero. I was never more proud of my father as I was that day. And I think it did sort of change. Dad and I have always been really close, but I think it did sort of change our relationship.
You know, I have a question for you, Jackie. You know, your dad, Navy, he went and saw the crew members of the USS Billings when they were here, and he got a chance to talk with them. But, you know, he goes to a lot of different events. When you go with him to these events, do you learn more about your dad each time?
Absolutely.
And is that scary sometimes, too?
No, I'm just super proud of him. Like, just a few minutes ago, he was meeting with two, well, three of the county commissioners were here, and Dad was sort of giving them advice.
Yeah,
he said one word, transparency, and I didn't tell him to say it because it's a journalist that would say that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's never afraid to speak his mind. He's a very humble man, but he has so much wisdom, 98 years of living. You know, he shares that wisdom.
As a journalist, did you ever write an article about your dad? And if you did, how tough was it?
Oh, my gosh, I did. That's how I got to go on the honor flight. Bill Kennedy, who was a county commissioner, raised the money for me to go because another journalist was covering it for the Billings Gazette, Ed Kemick. And so I was allowed to go, and I wrote, I think it's probably the best column of my whole life. I don't even know if Dad and I saved a copy of it. But it was, you know, it was emotional for me to write that column. And I just poured my heart out in a way that I probably had never done before.
Are you still writing, Jackie?
Yes.
Who do you write for?
Laurel Outlook. I'm the assistant editor in the Laurel Outlook. So, yes. So Dad's been the subject of my columns several times.
Jack, what was it like for you to be able to finally open up to your family?
Well, I think it was good. I think they did that, and it helped me a lot.
Yeah.
And I didn't, have any real combat suffering because of that. I was fortunate enough. I was there, and they were shooting at us and chip and stuff, but I didn't get injured and in the jungles and stuff, but I think it helped the family hearing what I did. And one thing I would say about the honor flight is I know I volunteer at St. Vincent's at the time, and there was three of us went there. One guy was a photographer and so forth, and the other one was a nurse practitioner. And them people, we drove up to this monument, and they had to unload 50 wheelchairs to get the...
Wow.
And they did good, so that was great. Yeah.
I remember those pictures, and it's emotional back here in the States.
Yes.
to watch you guys go through that and all of that emotion. What was the difference between World War II in the Korean War, from a soldier's perspective?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was somewhat similar. It was quite small.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the soldiers were about the same as maybe sometimes in the jungles of the South Pacific. So
you were able to help some refugees during your service from North Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about that story.
Well, we were getting, the United States military was getting kicked out of over there in North Korea, and we had a big base there, and so they kicked us all out. And right at the same time, we went out into the Pacific there on the, this was on the east side of Korea. And we got out there quite a ways, I don't know, 10 or 15 miles, and we saw this little fishing boat there that was in rough water, and I didn't know how they ever got there. It was so bad. And so we decided, the captain decided, well, we'll try to help them out. So we pulled up alongside of them and took them all on board the ship. And we quarantined them. There was 33, I believe. And then we got them all there off that fishing boat. The fishing boat would not have lasted in the sea there. And we took them on board and took them like 200 miles down into a safe place in South Korea. And I feel good about that because I know if we hadn't, as a ship, done that, they'd just perished.
Right. There's a lot of death, but there's also life in war, too.
Yes. Know? Oh, yes.
Yeah. Do you remember Jack Kindleman with us here, World War II veteran and a Korean War veteran, and his daughter Jackie. What's your last name again? I'm sorry.
Jackie Webb.
Webb. Thank you, Jackie. I apologize. I didn't get that. The experience that you had, do you still think about colleagues? How often do you remember? I've been around a lot of veterans, and they remember their war experiences more than they can remember what they had to eat that morning for breakfast. Because it's so it's indelible. You're imprinted in that way. Talk about the camaraderie. Talk about coming out of the service and how you got through what now we have a lot of services to help people through. How did you get through it, Jack?
Well, I don't know. We just, from Roundup, we had a meeting about July or something of 46, and we had veterans there, and that was the only time. And we had 50 or 60 veterans from all walks of life, and we did that. But there was most of the people my age, they were come out of the service, and they just wanted to get on with their life and forget about the war and everything. And I had a very good friend that was there, Harry Kowalski. He's gone now, but he was in Europe. And a lot of them veterans, the Navy people, did not have it quite as bad as the jungles and whatnot we had on board ship. And they were shooting at us, and we were in minefields, and it was just different. And I think the people were more independent as a society than as they are in Vietnam. It's such a terrible thing, and the public was so down on them, and they had a lot going for them, more than we did in World War II or Korea.
This is my final question. I could talk all day, I think, Jackie. And thank you, Jack, for coming down. I appreciate that. Because you're a seasoned veteran, right? And you look great, by the way. 98 years old, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're doing something right, Jack. I want that recipe. Do people ask you about your country? Do they ask you, are you proud of your country now? Or what do you think? You've served at a high level for your country, do you get that question, and how do you answer that?
Well, I don't see that I ever got much of that question. You know,
okay,
nobody, we just kind of went our own ways and didn't.
But now that you're 98, and you look back and you see a history of America.
Yeah, yeah. It was good to have served there. I was mainly in small places after the war. I was at Hungry Horse and Fort Peck.
Electrician, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then in Big Bend in South Dakota, Yellowtail. And then my last service was at Yellowtail. And then I did quite a bit of volunteering at St. Vincent's 31 years. Yeah.
Wow.
And that
wow.
was good.
Jackie, go ahead. You wanted to add something. Go.
You can tell.
Please. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it just the other day. These veterans came home. They were humble. They just went to work. And they built our country. They built the infrastructure of the United States. My dad worked on 4 dams. And, you know, he's a power operator. And they built our country. And others built roads. And, you know, they went into industry. And these veterans really created the United States that we have today. And I think Dad, inwardly, he's not a cocky kind of man, mm-hmm. but right. I think he probably is very proud of that, what he did, and yeah. I hope he is.
Maybe this better way to ask that question, what's your recommendation for America?
Oh, I think more responsibility of people, and everybody's got to, you and I and all the people, we have to pay taxes and do some work. Volunteerism is one great thing, I think. We need that.
We're live at Perkins. It is our special Veterans Day show as well. Good morning, sir. Thank you for your service as well. They're giving away a free Mag 7 breakfast, and they've done that for 17 years. Scott Frederick's the man behind that and joining us here as well from Desert Mountain Broadcasting. Just a few minutes, and Tim Summers, AARP Montana, I know you guys are heavily invested in our veterans, Tim, and I appreciate that an awful lot. You know, why don't you talk about, because I'm running out of time, but your dad served, and I wanted you to share some stories about that.
Yeah, that's right, Tom. Thank you, and thank you for doing this morning. You know, my dad was very, very quiet about what his service was, and he didn't see a whole lot of combat during World War II. In fact, he was a radio gunner in the back of an SBD dive bomber, and his service basically entailed 30 seconds of emptying his twin machine gun on a surfaced Japanese submarine. But a lot of his friends went out, never came back. And my uncle was on the USS Hancock when it was hit by kamikazes.
Wow.
You know, and when I grew up in a little town. And in my square block, there was a Omaha Beach veteran, a survivor, a Doolittle Raid crew member, and a gentleman who served in Okinawa as a Marine, all in my neighborhood. And boy, did they keep us in line. But it instilled in me just a love and patriotism for the service that these folks do. And so that's why we keep this service going at AARP Montana. We really appreciate the veterans who served World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and the War on Terror, all of them.
You guys are connected with a lot of groups through that program as well. How long did it take for you and your dad to start talking about the war?
You know, it really was until I was in my 20s and 30s, when he was later in life. He just felt that I didn't serve very much. And if you can imagine living in a neighborhood like that, he didn't want to share that he had just done a little bit. But I told him, Dad, everything counted. Everybody pitched in. That was the mentality of the country. It was just a beautiful thing.
I appreciate you coming down. And I know we chat with you guys frequently as well.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
And we'll pick it up again. And I know Social Security is on my mind, too. So that will take care of veterans, too. If
absolutely.
We, sure that.
I would just
Tim
like,
Summers, we got 5 seconds.
Yeah. I'd just like to remind folks of AARP.org/MTVets.
Lots of really good stuff there. Boy, I got to say how I'm honored I was, or we were, I think, as audience, I hope you are as well, to hear from Jack Kindleman, a World War II veteran. He's one of, there's under 46,000 left in the country, and fewer even in Montana. And just very, very thankful for that. Thank you for joining us again. It's our special Veterans Day program. Thanks to Desert Mountain Broadcasting and Scott Fredericks, who sets us up here at Perkins. We've been here since 6. They do a special, and it's been going on for for a lot of years. It's a Mag 7 breakfast. If you're a veteran, active military member, just come on in, order it, find a place to sit down. And there's a lot of veterans here that you can share some time with. We're going to move on now to something that I've been kind of really dying to talk more about here, and this is this camel cart. We have Judge Mary Jane Nisley, who's with us, who's been head of that camel cart. It's a program, and we have some program participants. Tyrell Bain, Andrew Loken is with the program, and then Emily Gorno as well is a camel graduate. First of all, Judge Nisley, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming here. Appreciate that very much. Tell us what camel cart is, how long it's been around, and then we can brag about these three here, okay?
Okay. So camel cart, it stands for Courts Assisting Military Offenders, and what we do is we take people who become justice involved, who have served in the military. They meet us probably at a really tough time in their life. They have been arrested. They're entering the court system and are screened, and then they come into our program where we start crafting a program to help them get back on their feet, to be productive society members, to avoid prison, to get the services that they need. And really proud of the Yellowstone County community, and honestly the whole state, because we take veterans from all around the state into the camel court. We offer substance use services. We offer treatment for mental health. We offer family services, parenting classes, work with MSUB on education services, voc rehab. We have a lot of Veterans Navigation Network, Volunteers of America. They do all sorts of things. So we've really kind of tried to put together a holistic program to assist our veterans as an alternative to going to prison.
As you delineated some of that, I mean, look how involved that program is. And so that takes a lot of coordination, which is not necessarily what happens behind the bench a little bit, right? It's a little different dynamic. Working with, instead of three people arguing a case, you're working with a community to get this case settled, actually.
We have a really amazing multidisciplinary team. It has attorneys, it has probation and parole, it has treatment folks. We have great coordinators who handle all the connecting the admin. They're the air traffic controllers of the camo.
Talk about Andrew Loken.
Andrew Loken, huh? Well, here's...
You can take a minute if you need.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Yeah. All right.
Andrew Loken came to our program after working at a DPHS for several years, and so he had some community connections already, and he jumped right in for both the steer and the camel court, getting them connected to our community as the extended services coordinator. He will tell you he does what we call a recovery capital assessment of folks when they first come in, and throughout the program about every 90 days to see what they have in place, where their gaps are, and then he connects them with services around the community. And he has a lot of, we have really amazing stakeholders here. I've never asked for one thing in this community that somebody didn't say, we're here to help.
Probably so, ahead of you, too. You know, they're volunteering. You don't even have to ask around here.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
That's really great. Hey, Andrew, talk about your journey as well. And then I'm going to have you talk about Tyrell. And I'm going to have you talk about Emily as well. And then you guys get to talk for yourself, too. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I worked for Child Protective Services for quite a while. And then I have experience working. I worked in the family treatment court under Judge Fair for quite a while. I was assigned to Judge Fair's treatment court, so I had some treatment court experience. And then I came over to Judge Nisley's court, and it's been cool because I get to wear a lot of different hats. That's why I usually tell people I get to wear a lot of different hats for both the camo and the steer court. I do spend a lot of time at the Elston County Detention Facility. We meeting with vets who are in jail. We do get a list of vets updated every day. And I go into the jail and I meet those vets. I learn what's going on with them and find out if they're a possibility for our court. I am the community outreach coordinator, so I connect veterans to various services in town. We work with Veterans Incorporated. We work with Veterans Navigation Network. Shout out to Mike McManus, Mike Foose, Eddie Foote, who was actually here last year.
He works
there. He's one of our mentors.
Glad to hear he's still there, too.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of our mentors. He works at Veterans Navigation Network, and Blake Furman, who I think you guys know. So we partner with all of the various veteran services in town. And then I also run the Recovery Capital program that Judge Nisely mentioned, which is a program that it's an assessment with a whole lot of different questions, and it gauges community involvement, it gauges commitment to recovery, their social capital, their personal capital, things that they do in the community. It gives them a visual of where they're struggling, where they can get better. It actually gives them a graph, and they can see where they're, if their line is moving up, and it gives them a visual of what they could work on. We do that assessment with them every 3 months, and then we hope to see this. So, as I said, I wear a lot of different hats for the court, and I like having a wide variety of things to do.
And I like, as you describe, all the different avenues there are now in the justice system. It's not just about justice or public protection. It's that as much as anything, but it's also about restoration, too. And this is the process, I think, that helps. So that's Andrew Loken, and also Judge Mary Jane Nisely is with us here from this Camel Court. It's based in Yellowstone County. Bain, good morning, sir. Thank you for coming on. Emily Gorno as well. Emily is a graduate of the program, and Tyrell is a current participant. I'll ask you first, and then I'll ask you second. So, Emily first. What did it take you to get in the door?
I was court-ordered. It was part of my sentence initially, and I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah. What happened when you got through that door?
I was inducted into Camel Court March of 2021. You know, my past, I was a runner. I ran from my past, you know, until I was forced to sit with myself and face my past. And Camel Court provided that structure, that sense of security, that safety. And with my fellow comrades, they had my six, you know, in a different aspect this time. So I'm really grateful for my battle buddies in the court system.
Do you draw upon that experience as you're now a graduate and moving forward in your life? How do you draw upon that? How do you get out of bed the next day, so to speak?
Every day I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the tools and the skills that I was provided by the great treatment team of Camel Court and Silverleaf, Rimrock. They provided me, they were able to connect me with resources and other veteran organizations within the community to help with my stable housing. And one of those organizations I was once a client in, I am now an employee in. So I'm able to give back to my community and my fellow veterans, and it's an honor to be of service to them.
You're brave, Emily. You're brave to do this.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's my honor. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and Judge Nisely, you had to kind of smile, right? Because this is success.
And she is my friend. Yeah. And it is great. It's amazing to watch the growth that she has had and the obstacles that she has navigated from the time she signed up for the service until she sits here today and keeps giving back.
We're going to make her cry even some more.
Oh, well, she makes me cry.
I know. How important was it? And even right now, to hear Judge Mary Jane Nisely say she's my friend.
It's definitely an honor, you know. Healing is a choice. We all have that choice. Yeah. And sometimes that legal nudge is needed.
Yeah. Sometimes a nudge is needed. Tyler Bain, current CAMEL participant, was it a nudge or a kick in the butt that got you in there?
It was rock bottom that got me.
It was rock bottom. Yes. Tell us your story.
Like how I got into Camel Court there?
Yeah. Well, yes, or whatever you like to share. I mean, Tyler Bain, right now current Camel participant.
Yeah. My service was like anybody's of our generation. Went overseas in the Middle East, fought a war that don't really know what we fought for, except for to come home, bring our guys home.
Right.
With that, had a lot of suicide loss within my ranks. A lot of close friends of mine, and I was to that point too. and then lost my marriage, lost everything that I had due to my own devices. Ended up at rock bottom with nothing but myself and my thoughts. And I turned myself in. I had warrants and everything. I'm a runner too, just like Emily is. I had warrants, and I'd had enough, and I turned myself in. And my dad, a great man, he never has bailed me out, but he's always been there, right there with me, for whatever I needed, as long as it was within reason. Made me answer for everything that I've ever done in my life, so I really appreciate him for that. But a good friend of mine that I served with, he had went through this Camel Court a couple years previous to me, and I seen what it did in his life. And I was at the point where I needed to make a change. It wasn't the easier choice. I had a choice to go to prison, or I had a choice to come here. And if I would have went to prison, I would have already been out, but I wouldn't be where I am today. I feel like I've gotten a fresh start. I feel like I finally came home. Honestly, for 10 years, I just was struggling and didn't really know who I was, where I was, or what I was doing with my life, other than the normal day-to-day, right? So I got into Camel Court. My dad looked into it, called up Gina, which is our court. I can't remember what her title is.
Your coordinator.
Coordinator, yep. My dad got a hold of her, and they worked it all out, and I got in. It was the best decision that I ever made.
You wanna comment? I can't. I'm a little emotionally, but
on Ty?
Well, both of these. talk about this end result. Look at Tyrell. He's able to talk about this. He's able to say, I had to at some point face up. And that's not an easy decision, Tyrell, either. No. Yeah.
So when Ty just said, I felt like I finally came home, we try to provide an individualized program that meets people where they are. And where they are the day they walk in the door is very different than where they are at the end of the program. And they always say, you know, as your screening participants, we do not cherry pick our participants. We do not. We take the toughest of the toughest, the highest of the risk, the highest needs. And I guess I would say through the five phases, Ty's in phase three. He could probably go to phase four, but he is settled in. He's doing the work he needs to do. Ty drives for the DAV van for other veterans, and he shared with me today that that van used to give him rides when he would fly into Billings for services. That's a true give back. Finally coming home. Home is kind of where you are that day, and I feel privileged to have Ty in our court. Emily and I have had a chance to, and I know Emily's daughter, have had a chance to spend a longer period of time together because she came into the court and then she went through the court and then she navigated her life after the court and graduated from college and included me and things like that. I'm very, very proud of both of these veterans and the fact that they were willing to dip their toe and trust us at Camel Court. It's a courtroom. It's a little bit different setup, but it's a courtroom where you begin standing at a podium and hopefully it becomes a place that you can really share your stuff and be honest and come out on the other side. And even when you graduate, it isn't over. I mean, this journey for veterans is not over. So thank you.
You're brave too, Tyrell. You both are, and you're saving lives. Same with you, Andrew. The people you get into the door and out of the door, they're saving lives. That's just the plain truth about where we're at. The effort that you guys put in. Thank you. I know you do it individually. You do it for the ones you love. But there's really good collateral things going on with that, so thank you. We're going to do a larger show about this. I think we need to get into it in more detail sometime down the road. Out of time for right now, though. So Emily and Tyrell and Andrew and Judge Nicely, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And thank you, Emily, for your service. Tyrell.
Thank you.
Andrew.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.